I'm Bill Littlefield. It's time for the NFL playoffs. Fans will now get to watch the league's very best compete, right? Right? That's where we're going to begin this week's three stories you should know. My guests this time around are Mike Pesca. He's the host of the Daily Slate podcast, The Gist, and Karen Given, who has the desk right next to mine. Greetings and salutations to both of you.
Hey, Bill.
Hello.
Mike, I'm sure football is on your mind. What's up?
So the NFL is at bottom an entertainment enterprise. No, I know they couch themselves in the language of grit and America and adversity, but it's supposed to be entertaining. That's
yes.
why they make
yeah.
money. I cannot see how one would define the game between the Raiders and the Texans as entertaining. Here are the quarterbacks of this NFL enterprise. A guy named Connor Cook starting in his first ever NFL game for the Raiders. They had a very good quarterback. Derek Carr went down. Then Matt McGloin, funny named Matt McGloin, also went down in week 17. So enter Connor Cook, first time ever that a guy is making his debut in an NFL playoff game. The Texans have a winning record. They are a terrible, terrible team. An outfit called Football Outsiders does a pretty good statistical analysis. It's at least consistent from year to year. And Houston is worse than San Francisco, which finished the season 2-14. The guy who they at least wanted to be quarterback, he went down with a concussion. There is Brock Osweiler, who had 15 touchdowns, 16 interceptions, and was the worst free agent signing of this year.
I am so glad that you mentioned the quarterback situation, because it gives me the opening to talk about my favorite fake news story of the week. And I know we're all supposed to hate fake news, but listen to this. Breaking: Texans Raiders agree to hire Peyton Manning as all-time quarterback for their wild card game. So this is from the Sports Pickle. And they basically just set up a world in which both teams decide our quarterbacks are so bad, let's just bring back Peyton and have him play for both sides. Now that would be entertaining.
Archie's an improvement. Forget Peyton.
All right, you guys are not going to believe this, but I'm going to stand up for football. First of all, the NFL has a system that works as well as a system can work in terms of determining which team should be in the playoffs, right? I don't know how you would tweak that particular system to make it produce more appealing playoff games. Secondly, two bad teams can certainly produce an entertaining game. They might set a record for fumbles. They might set a record for number of times the kicker hits the crossbar. Mm-hmm. Any number of fascinating circumstances could happen.
This is what the NFL wants: parity. Any team could win, and yet we have to watch any team play. It's the sort of game that had me asking, is Storks out on DVD yet?
Karen, I understand you have been focused on the act of tripping, which doesn't sound particularly promising to me and makes me a little concerned for my safety in the space between our two desks.
Yeah,
but go
watch
ahead.
Out, Bill. Yeah, so on Wednesday, Duke coach Mike Krzyzewski lifted the, quote, indefinite suspension of Duke guard Grayson Allen. Allen had been suspended for tripping an opponent and having a meltdown on the bench afterwards. It wasn't his first time tripping an opponent. It wasn't his second. It was his third tripping offense. But he only served one game suspension. That indefinite suspension became one game, and it was a loss to Virginia Tech on New Year's Eve, and people are kind of losing their minds. But then also, there are a lot of explanations, aka justifications, as to why Duke was right to do this. One is that Coach K was going out for back surgery, and he wanted the team all set before he left, so he released the suspension, which kind of leaves the message that it's wrong to trip an opponent unless your coach is going out for back surgery, and then it's just fine. But there's one argument that really sort of works for me, and it's this. The ACC, the conference that Duke plays in, decided not to do anything. Don't suspend him. Don't punish him in any way. The NCAA decided not to do anything. Don't suspend him. Don't punish him in any way. So if those two organizations don't want to step up and do something, why do we expect Duke to step up and do something? I mean, isn't Duke in the business of winning basketball games?
Well, isn't Mike Krzyzewski in charge of both those organizations? It seems to me, having watched basketball, he is. So they would defer to him, much bigger than the sub-pubas at the NCAA.
I think if a booster had offered this kid a hamburger to trip somebody, he'd have been out for the rest of the season because the NCAA would have been all over it.
Yes, gifts in kind. But, you know, Duke needs an arch-villain, usually a white arch-villain, to win a championship. You know, Leitner and Hurley and J.J. Redick. Like, this is the archetype of Duke. And so Grayson Allen comes along, and he looks a lot like Ted Cruz. So he has this arch-villain vibe, but he doesn't really act archly villainous until he starts. Tripping people. So I think this really argues well for Duke's going deep into the tournament.
To be serious about this for just a minute, it seems to me that the one-game suspension simply suggests that as far as men's basketball goes, Duke is no different from any other competitive D1 program. Fringe players who do stupid or illegal things get cut, and everybody talks about how the coach has things in perspective. More significant players do stupid or illegal things, and the coach says they need the discipline that basketball or football can provide, and that will help them mature as fine young men. We probably ought to stop talking about particular programs as somehow always doing it right, because I don't think any of them do.
It is about winning games no matter where you're playing and who you're playing for. And I'm really, I started off thinking, grr, Duke on this one. And I sort of brought myself around. I've given up on the idea that Duke should be punishing this kid. However, like the meltdown on the bench afterwards, the fact that he can't seem to stop tripping people.
And blatantly doing
blatantly,
it. It's
just that
these are not subtle trips.
People.
These are, I'm going to stick my leg out and you're going over it.
So I've given up on the idea that Duke should punish him, but I do kind of wonder if he has a little self-control problem, maybe a problem with anger, and maybe he should be being helped with that.
All right, enough with football and basketball. This week, Ashton Eaton retired, and I wonder how many people hearing me say that are asking themselves who. But the fact is that now somebody else is going to have to become the world's greatest athlete because Ashton Eaton won the decathlon at each of the past two Olympics. The guy who won the decathlon used to be regarded as the world's greatest athlete. Think Bruce Jenner, if you like. Among this nation's enthusiastic football, basketball, baseball, hockey, soccer, and tennis fans, who regards a guy who runs three races, throws a javelin and a discus, jumps over hurdles, and so on as the world's greatest athlete? It's just not happening anymore. And that isn't Ashton Eaton's fault. And maybe more attention should be paid than has been paid. What do you think, Mike?
Well, I love the decathlon. I love somewhat obscure Olympic sports. The question is, why is it obscure? First of all, I think the scoring system really is an impediment to getting into the decathlon. It relies on decimals and numbers that you can't crunch. And the other thing is, I know that's the branding of world's greatest athlete, but I don't think most people believe it because if you're such a great athlete, the argument would go, wouldn't you maybe be a Deion Sanders or Bo Jackson in two sports that are well-loved? By dominating these obscure sports, you're great at the decathlon, and that's a certain skill set. But is it ipso facto that you are the greatest athlete? I don't know the answer to that. The decathlon's, you know, it has a lot of power. It has a lot of endurance. It is a pretty broad range of athleticism. I just don't know that it attracts the best athlete. That said, what this guy has done, you're absolutely right. As an American who's so dominant in this discipline, should absolutely be celebrated more.
One of the things that I think is super interesting is that the website 538 did this statistical analysis of what fans think are the best and worst Olympic sports. And the decathlon's right up there. I mean, it's ranked number 8, you know, behind things like track and field 100 meter, the 4x100 meter relay.
The component parts of the decathlon, in other words.
Right, exactly. So people seem to intellectually understand that it's a great sport, yet people don't seem to want to watch it. And I have a theory on that. And that's this. Sports is about entertainment. It's not about what's hardest. It's not about what's best. It's not about what's most important. And we could say that about everything. We don't read Moby Dick very often, but a whole lot of people read 50 Shades of Grey. That doesn't mean 50 Shades of Grey is better than Moby Dick.
You don't read Moby Dick very often?
No, never, never.
That dog-eared copy of Moby Dick on your desk is just a prop?
Yes, it is a paperweight.
I would have, but my safe word is Ishmael, and so I stopped at word three.
Anyway, so yeah, this is
and
my
Herman Melville takes it on the chin once again.
Yep.
Number one, let's see Deion Sanders try and throw the discus. Number two, there's a story about this guy that I just encountered that I really love. Apparently, when he was a little kid, he read this fantasy piece that said, if there were ever an intergalactic competition and every planet had the opportunity to send just one athlete out to be its champion and represent the planet, the Earth should send their top decathlete. And finally, in order to utterly subvert and sink my own position, the world's greatest athlete was Willie Mays. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. So my guests for this week's Three Stories You Should Know have been Mike Pesca, host of the Daily Slate podcast, The Gist, and Karen Given, who typically writes sentences like the one you're hearing right now so that I can say them. Thanks to both of you.
Thanks, Phil.
You're welcome.